longer the end-all be-all date, but I would try my damn hardest to open the club by then anyway. It was my challenge to myself. If I accomplished it, fantastic. If not, well, my father had built his empire from pennies. I could too. I consulted with half a dozen contractors, and the general consensus was that the damage wasn't as dire as I'd feared. Sloan had been right. The vault possessed a lot of fireproof elements. And though it needed major work, the right team for the right price could get the job done in 2 months. I happily paid that price out of my own pocket. The new timeline meant I had to change my original design plans, but Farah was the city's best hospitality interior designer for a reason. After several brainstorming sessions, we came up with a new concept that would take less time to implement, but still fit my vision for the club. It threw her sourcing completely off schedule, but the hefty bonus I paid her made up for the trouble. However, there was one more loose end I needed to tie up before I immersed myself completely in my new plans. The second Tuesday of the year after the city had recovered from its holiday lull and resumed its usual breakneck pace, I entered Vuk's Upper East Side mansion. From the outside, the sprawling building resembled a fortress more than it did a home. There were enough to security measures to make Fort Knox look like child's play. But the inside was the epitome of old-school luxury. Spiral staircases, arched windows, and Gothic influences abounded. Every room was bigger than the last, and marble busts glared at me from their dedicated display tables as I followed the butler into Vuk's office. The butler announced me and disappeared in a discreet flash of silver hair and starched white cotton. Vuk's office was as dark and gloomy as the rest of the house. Black paneling, black desk, black leather furniture. The only specks of color were the emerald glass lamp on his desk and his wintry blue eyes as they tracked my approach. It was my first time seeing him since the fire. His remote expression was a far cry from the terror I'd glimpsed before I dragged him out of the vault. But I'd never forget that look in his eyes. Frozen, despairing, haunted. "How are you?" I ditched my default irreverence for true concern. Vuk and I weren't friends, but he was my business partner, and he'd taken a big chance on me. Plus, he'd been caught in the fire because of me, so I felt partially responsible for whatever he'd gone through the past few weeks. He dipped his chin, which I took as a sign he was doing well enough. "What about Willow?" I asked. Another dip of his chin. "Right." I'd forgotten how difficult it was to hold a conversation with someone who refused to speak. He didn't seem inclined to express any further thoughts, so I gave him a quick summary of my revised plans for the club and an update on the opening party. It felt strange talking business when we'd almost died the last time we saw each other. But Vuk didn't strike me as the type who liked discussing emotions, or past traumas, or much of anything, really. He made a noise of approval when I finished and scribbled something on a sheet of paper. "Who's on the guest list for the opening?" Interesting. Of everything I'd said, that was the part I least expected him to focus on. "I'm finalizing the invites this week," I said. "I'll email you a full list once I'm done." I wasn't confident about pulling off the club by my birthday, but I was confident in my ability to throw a kick-ass party. Even if people were dubious about my business acumen, they'd show up to see me sink or swim and have a damn good time in the process. "If there's anyone you want me to include, just let me know," I added. I'd asked out of courtesy. Vuk didn't date, didn't have a close social circle, and didn't care about public appearances, so I didn't expect him to have anyone in mind. However, he proved me wrong when he wrote something else on a fresh sheet of paper. It contained only one word, specifically one name. Ayana. The same Ayana who'd just gotten engaged. My gaze snapped up to Vuk's stoic one. He didn't offer an explanation for the name, and I didn't ask. "She's already on the list, but I'll triple check," I said, rearranging my own expression into one of neutrality. He nodded, I left, and that was that. It was the quickest, easiest meeting I'd had since I came up with the idea for the vault. Honestly, it could have been a virtual meeting, but I'd wanted to check on Vuk in person and make sure he was doing okay after the fire. Obviously, he was. I exited the mansion in flashback to the sight of Ayana's name written in bold black strokes. He'd pressed the pen so hard it punctured a tiny hole in the paper. Then again, maybe he wasn't okay. But that was none of my business. I had enough on my plate without taking on others' troubles, so I put Vuk's strange interest in the supermodel aside and simply made a note to myself to ensure Ayana attended the grand opening no matter what.
Sloane. Being in love was strange. The overall rhythm of my day-to-day stayed consistent. I still went to work, hung out with my friends, and dealt with wild client demands. But the details had changed. They were softer, more fluid, like moonlight slipping between the rigid blinds of my life. I was quicker to smile and slower to anger. The air smelled fresher, and my steps were lighter. Everything seemed more tolerable with the knowledge that, no matter what happened, there was someone out there who called me his and who I called mine. Some mornings I lazed in bed with Javier instead of waking up early for yoga. Some nights, at his suggestion, I dipped my toe into horror films. Hilarious. Horror protagonists were almost uniformly dense. And slapstick comedy, not for me. Afternoons were either spent eating at my desk on particularly busy work days, or at a string of increasingly adorable bistros that Javier found. Routine became suggestion, and every suggestion became a touch more magical when Javier was involved. I was disgustingly happy, but even so, there were still a few rough patches of my life that needed smoothing over. One of them was the situation with Penn and Rhea. 2 weeks after I ran into Caroline at Le Boudoir, I received a curt email requesting I meet her at my family's penthouse. Javier had gone to see Vuk, so I showed up alone, my heart giving a little twist at the sight of the building I'd called home for half my life. It looked exactly the same as the last time I was here, down to the hunter green awning and potted plants by the entrance.
Miss Sloane!
The doorman greeted me with a surprised smile.
It's nice to see you again. It's been a long time.
Hi, Clarence. I smiled back, oddly touched that he'd remembered me after all these years. He used to sneak me little pieces of candy every time I came home from school. My father had forbidden me from eating too many sweets, and he'd been furious when he found some of the wrappers in my room. I'd lied and told him I'd gotten the candy at school. It has been a long time. How's Nicole doing?
She's great.
He beamed brighter at the mention of his daughter.
She's in her first year at Northwestern. Journalism.
We chatted for a few more minutes before another resident came down, asking for a cab. I said goodbye to Clarence and took the elevator straight up to the penthouse. I didn't recognize the housekeeper who answered the door, but when I followed her through the halls, I had to battle a surprising bout of nostalgia. The oil paintings, the cream marble floors, the scent of calla lilies. It was like someone had preserved my childhood home in a gilded time capsule. And while I didn't miss living here, I missed the happy moments I did have growing up. Of course, there hadn't been many of them, and they'd been overshadowed by my father or sister in one way or another. That was all it took to bring me back to reality. I shook my head and brushed off the last bits of understandable but unwelcome sentimentality before I entered the living room, where my father and Caroline waited for me. Obviously, Caroline had talked to him as promised, but neither looked too happy to see me. That was fine. I wasn't thrilled to see them either, though I was a bit surprised to see my father at home on a weekday afternoon. I suppose that was a perk of running your own company. I sat on the couch across from them and arched a cool brow. I was dying to ask 1,001 questions about Penn, but I wouldn't give them the upper hand by speaking first. Tension dripped around us for several minutes before Caroline caved. I've discussed Penelope's situation with George, she said without preamble. He's agreed that it's untenable. Therefore, we've decided that, despite the original terms of your departure from this family, it would be beneficial for all parties involved if you resumed your correspondence with Penelope. Caroline sounded like someone was pulling her teeth out with pliers with each word.
But let us be clear. This isn't a free pass for you to worm your way back into this family.
My father's eyes blazed beneath thick, gray brows.
You disrespected us, embarrassed us, and ignored us when we gave you an opportunity to make amends. However...
His glower deepened when Caroline glared at him.
Penelope is clearly attached to you. So for her sake, we're willing to give you some leeway provided you act appropriately.
I have no intention of worming my way back into this family, I said coolly. The very idea was laughable. I'm doing perfectly fine on my own. So let me be clear. The only reason I'm here is because of Pen. She's the only Kensington I want anything to do with, and I have zero interest in dredging up the past. You betrayed me. I embarrassed you. I don't care. Now, let's get to the real reason why we're here, shall we? I wasn't worried about them kicking me out. They'd swallowed a massive amount of pride just by asking me to come, and they wouldn't throw that away before they said what they wanted to say. My father's face turned a fascinating shade of purple. He'd thrown me off balance at the hospital, but I hadn't planned on seeing or confronting him then. This time I was prepared, but I no longer cared enough to engage more than I had to. Sometime between Penn's hospitalization and now, I'd healed enough to not let him get to me by the mere fact of his existence. We're willing to let you see Penelope on our terms, Caroline said stiffly, drawing my attention back to her. I bristled at her choice of words, but I kept my mouth shut until she finished. Specifically, once a month, at a predetermined time, date, and location of our choosing. Once a week, at a predetermined time and date of our choosing. I shook my head when she opened her mouth to argue. Pen is 9. She's homeschooled, which means she doesn't get many opportunities to interact with kids her age. You and George are rarely home, and you've fired the only person in this household who treats her normal. The least you can do is let her have some say in her own life. Silence engulfed the room. Caroline glanced at George. A telltale vein throbbed in his forehead, but he gritted out an acquiescence.
Fine. Once a week at a time, date, and location of your choosing.
He stood abruptly, his frame radiating barely suppressed anger.
We're done here.
He left without another glance at me or his wife. Caroline took his sudden departure in stride. In the future, you and Penelope will meet elsewhere, she said, flicking her eyes over me. I have no interest in bringing you into our home again. As you can see, your presence has a way of creating strife. I ignored her jab and focused on the first part. In the future? Does that mean... My stomach flipped with a sudden surge of hope. Caroline smiled thinly. You may want to stay in the room for a bit longer. Then she, too, left, but she'd barely departed before a familiar girlish voice squealed, Sloan! I turned my head in time to get tackled by a small blonde blur. Penn's arms wrapped around my waist, and a rush of pure, indescribable relief filled my lungs. I hugged her back, my chest so tight it hurt to breathe. Hey, Penn. I smiled past the swell of emotion in my throat. I missed you. I missed you too. She looked up at me, her eyes shimmering with tears. She looked a lot thinner than the last time I'd seen her. While I was glad to see her again, we needed to have a talk about her hunger strike. After I finished squeezing the hell out of her. I didn't think I was going to see you or Rhea again, she said in a small voice. My heart broke at the vulnerability in the words. Trust me, I would have found a way to see you again, one way or another. I meant it. My father and Caroline couldn't have stopped me from seeing Penn forever. I would have found a way around their stonewalling, though this was a much better alternative than other, perhaps less ethical, alternatives. I didn't think I was going to see you or Rhea again. The last part of Penn's sentence registered, and a furrow dug between my brows. What did she... A flash of movement caught the corner of my eye. I turned, taking in the woman hovering in the doorway. "Rhea," I gasped. "You're back." Penn's old nanny smiled, looking tired but satisfied. "I'm back," she confirmed. "Mrs. Kensington called me after the new year. Penny put up such a fuss that the nanny they'd hired after me quit."
"That new nanny sucked," Penn said. "She didn't even know that Black Castle is a soccer team."
The remaining tension broke, and there were hugs and tears all around as the three of us reunited for the first time since November. Well, not tears from me. I hadn't been able to cry again since I reconciled with Javier. I suspected I'd emptied the well so thoroughly, it'd take another 20-odd years before the phenomenon happened again. However, the joy of seeing Penn again didn't stop me from scolding her about her hunger strike. It wasn't healthy, especially not for someone with her condition. "What's this I hear about you refusing to eat?" She slunk down in her seat.
"I didn't refuse to eat. I simply skipped a few meals and threatened to skip more unless they let me see you."
"You shouldn't do that, Penn," I said gently. "Your health is the most important thing, and skipping meals can be seriously harmful."
"But they took you and Rhea away, and the threats worked," she protested. "See? Look at us."
She gestured at our trio.
"Honestly, I should have tried that tactic sooner. Then we wouldn't have had to sneak around for so many years."
I sighed while Rhea shook her head. There was no arguing with Penn. She won every time. "What do you want to do today?" I asked, switching topics. As long as she ate regularly going forward, there was no use dwelling on what was already done. "I took off work, so I'm all yours." I'd planned on going into the office that afternoon, but I'd just emailed Jillian to tell her I wouldn't be in. Penn pursed her lips, her little face scrunched in thought.
"I want to watch a movie."
My eyebrows shot up. She rarely wanted to do something as calm as watching a movie. She watched soccer games, but that was different. "A movie? Are you sure?"
"Yes."
She gave a definitive nod.
"I don't want to get tired too fast."
"Then a movie it is." We decamped to the screening room, where I put on a cartoon about fairy princesses and filled her in on what had happened since we last talked. I omitted the non-kid-friendly parts. There were some things about my life that Penn never needed to know.
"Did Javier hurt you?" she asked. "Because I told him I'd sick Mary on him if he did."
"He did briefly, but he didn't mean it, and he apologized." I paused, my brow creasing. "Who's Mary?"
"A haunted Victorian doll."
I narrowed my eyes. "You don't have a Victorian doll. They creep you out."
"I know."
Penn's grin was pure mischief.
"But he doesn't know that."
I couldn't help it. I burst into laughter. She was definitely going to be a handful when she grew up. Penn made it through the entire movie before her energy flagged. Now that our visits were out in the open, she didn't protest as much as she usually did when we said goodbye. I told Rhea to call me in the next few days so we could schedule our next visit, and I waited for them to disappear into Penn's room before I left. I made it halfway through the foyer when the front door opened and I came face to face with my other sister. Georgia and I froze at the same time. She was impeccably groomed, per usual, but I detected shadows beneath her slightly bloodshot eyes. Her baby bump was finally showing, but that hadn't stopped her from wearing 3-inch heels or blitzing through Madison Avenue. Her arms were laden with shopping bags from a dozen designer stores. "Moving back home into the Viper's Nest?" I asked. "How sentimental." Georgia sniffed and tossed her hair, but her eyes darted left and right like she'd rather be anywhere else except here.
"I'm staying here while our townhouse is getting renovated. The fumes are bad for the baby," she said,
emphasizing the last word like I cared that she was pregnant and I wasn't. Bullshit. She was too much of a control freak not to nitpick renovations from as close quarters as possible. But if the townhouse wasn't getting renovated, then why? "Is Bentley staying here too?" I asked on a hunch. Georgia's eye twitched, proving my hunch correct. I didn't know what happened after I sent her the audio recording, but obviously, it was enough for her to move back home for however long. She still wore her wedding ring, but that didn't mean much. Plenty of people wore their wedding rings long after the love behind them had dissolved. Instead of feeling triumphant or vindicated by the evidence of their relationship troubles, I felt nothing. Because, simply put, I didn't care. Not anymore. You might think you did something by playing that audio in your office, but you didn't, she said when I brushed past her. Bentley and I are weathering a few issues at this time, but we'll never leave each other. I will always be the one he chose over you. I looked at her, with her perfect hair and expensive clothes and diamond ring, and felt something I never thought I'd feel toward her. Pity. I'd grown up jealous and resentful of Georgia for being our father's favorite and for playing the perfect daughter and socialite so well when I'd struggled to do the same. She'd always gotten what she wanted, and I'd thought that was something to be envied. It wasn't until now that I realized my jealousy had been misplaced because Georgia was never happy with what she had. She was only happy when she took things away from other people. She spent her life trying to win invisible competitions with others because it made her feel superior when, in reality, her power plays were the ultimate sign of insecurity. If I still cared enough about her as a sister, I would try to help her, but I didn't. That bridge had burned long ago. You're wrong. I did do something, I said calmly. I proved your husband is a lying scumbag. Though I'd correctly guessed it wouldn't matter if it took you that long to recognize his faults. If you want to stay with him, stay. If you want to divorce him one day, then do that. There's no need to tell me because I truly don't care. But I hope, for your unborn baby's sake, that he treats them better than he's treated anyone else in his life. Otherwise, he'll learn that children aren't always as forgiving as wives. Georgia sucked in a sharp breath. But I didn't wait for a response. I walked out the door and didn't look back.
Chapter 46. Javier. The next 4 months passed in a whirlwind of meetings and construction during the day and dates out or evenings in at night. During that time, Sloane and I fell into an unspoken rhythm of staying at each other's houses. 1 week I'd crash at her apartment, the next she'd take up residence at my townhouse. I gave her her own closet so she didn't have to keep lugging her belongings across town, and she added my favorite brand of espresso to her pantry so I could get my caffeine fix without leaving her place. They were quiet milestones that passed without fanfare, but they kept me going during the most hectic, gray-hair-inducing season of my life. Contractor delays, customs issues, a nearby steam pipe explosion that cut off our access to the vault for a full week. Problems abounded throughout the repair and construction process, and that wasn't counting the massive egos I had to deal with on the marketing side of things. The vault is underground, I told a certain rock star's second assistant. It doesn't have an attached helipad. No, unfortunately we cannot build one before the opening. Yes, I will make sure we have security in place so he doesn't get mobbed by fans in the 10 feet between his car and the entrance. I cast a warning glare at Sloane, who smirked from her spot next to me on the couch. She was handling the RSVPs for the party, but I'd insisted on sharing the guest relations duties because I had personal relationships with a lot of the attendees. I deeply regretted the decision. However, construction issues and self-important guests aside, the run-up to the vault's opening went mostly according to plan. There were no more fires, thank God, nor were there any major accidents or injuries. The steam pipe explosion cut into our already tight timeline, but my crew pulled through by the skin of their teeth. The day before my 30th birthday, we were still putting finishing tiles in the bathrooms, but we got it done. All of it. The following evening, after dozens of sleepless nights and crushing self-doubts, the vault officially opened before the clock struck midnight, and I turned the big 3-0. 250 of the city's wealthiest and most influential filled the renovated space, sipping cocktails next to the original 6-inch steel walls and admiring the 100-year-old brass chandelier. Every single person had RSVP'd yes. There was Ayana and the fashion crowd, Isabella and the publishing heavyweights, Dominic and the barons of Wall Street, and more. Every major entertainment and society outlet was present for coverage, because tonight, more titans of business, politics, celebrity, and art had converged in one place since the last Legacy Ball. I'd never been so proud. The night was young, and there were still 100 things that could go wrong, but the fact that I got this far meant everything. No matter how the Inheritance Committee ruled tomorrow, I'd created my own business and legacy, and no one could take that accomplishment away.
Have you seen the owner? I have a message for him.
I turned, my mouth curving into a smile when Sloane came into view, breaking me out of my pensive mood. I was taking a moment for myself in the back before I started mingling, but the guests could wait a bit longer. They had plenty to entertain them. Sloane sauntered toward me in a shimmery silver-white dress and heels that made her legs look miles long. Her hair fell in loose waves around her shoulders, and her eyes sparkled with a hint of mischief as she came up beside me. It didn't matter how many mornings I woke up to her, or how many nights I fell asleep beside her. She never failed to take my breath away. "I'm not sure where he is, but I'm happy to pass the message along," I drawled. My blood burned a little hotter when she pressed her hand against my chest, but I maintained a deceptively casual stance while I waited.
"Good."
Sloane threaded the fingers of her other hand through my hair, brought my mouth down to hers, and pressed her lips softly against mine. 1 second. 2 seconds. 3. The kiss lingered on the third beat before she pulled away, leaving behind the taste of mint and strawberries.
"Pass that along to him,"
she murmured.
"Tell him happy birthday, and congratulations on a job well done."
Warmth flickered in my chest, but I couldn't resist a little tease. "I'm happy to, but do you mind repeating that from the top? I want to make sure I get it exactly right." Sloane rolled her eyes, but she was smiling.
"Only because it's such a big night."
She kissed me again, deeper this time.
"You did it,"
she said, abandoning her earlier pretense.
"How does it feel?"
"Pretty incredible. And we did it," I said. "I couldn't have done this without you." Publicity work aside, her faith in me had kept me going through the many setbacks and frustrations of the past 4 months. She shook her head.
"I helped, but this was all possible because of you. Don't undersell your accomplishments. The vault is your baby. Own it."
The flicker of warmth ignited into a roaring flame. "Have I ever told you how much I loved you?"
"Once or twice, but I'm not opposed to hearing it again."
"I love you," I murmured. "Más que cualquier otro cosa en el mundo." This time, I kissed her, and I let it last. Time with Sloane always melted away, and we might have stayed in our little corner in the back forever had one of the guests not spotted us and interrupted to give me his well wishes.
"We should probably join the party,"
she said after he left. Her cheeks were flushed from our embrace, but I could see her kicking back into work mode.
"Everyone is here for you. We'll celebrate privately later."
"Looking forward to it," I said with a wicked grin that turned her cheeks from pink to red. But Sloane was right. So after one last tiny kiss, hey, it was my birthday, I could take my time, we took to the main floor where a crowd had already formed around the bespoke bar featuring Markovich Holding's first alcohol-free vodka. Mixologists worked their magic conjuring stunning mocktails of pink and blue and green and serving them in frosted glasses adorned with various garnishes. Across the room, the alcoholic bar catered to an equally large crowd. Vuk commanded his own table in the space between the two bars. He sat by himself, and it was difficult to tell if he was happy, annoyed, or indifferent. He wasn't even paying attention to his latest product launch. He was too busy glaring at something. I followed his gaze to where Ayana stood with her fiancé, a fashion CEO who, according to the rumors, also happened to be one of Vuk's old college friends. That can't be good. Before I could ask Sloane what she knew about the relationship between Vuk and Ayana, Isabella popped up, purple mocktail in hand.
Hey, guys,
she bubbled.
Great party, and happy birthday, Javier. This place is a hit.
I smiled at her enthusiasm. Thank you.
So, I was looking for you because I have an idea for your Tastemaker series.
Isabella's eyes gleamed. That, combined with Sloane's sudden grin, set off every alarm in my head.
How do you feel about hosting a book preview for Wilma Pebbles' upcoming dinosaur erotica?
Isabella asked.
I met her at a recent event, and she gave me an advanced copy of Penetrated by the Pterodactyl. It's amazing, and she has a huge fan base.
I blinked, unsure whether she was fucking with me or deadly serious. It was always hard to tell with Isabella.
Think about it.
She glanced to the side, clearly distracted by the arrival of another movie star.
I'll send you her backlist so you can get a feel for her books. I really think it'll be a fun event.
Then she was gone, leaving me to shake my head. I thought she was going to ask me to host a preview of her new book, not Wilma Pebbles.
Oh, Issa's love for dino erotica runs far deeper than her own career ambitions,
Sloane said, her grin widening.
Trust me.
For my own sake, I declined to ask for further information. Halfway through the night, Sloane and I split to mingle with different guests. I personally thanked everyone who helped me get the vault off the ground, including Dominic Davenport, who seemed to be surgically attached to his wife's side, and Sebastian, who'd pulled through with the catering.
You pulled this off, man!
Sebastian clapped a hand on my shoulder. Now I owe Russo 10 grand.
Ah, you bet against me? I asked with mock offense.
I had faith in you, but Luca's usually wrong. He laughed. He glanced over my shoulder and his smile turned into a smirk. Speaking of Russo's, I'll leave you to this one. Good luck. He disappeared before I could respond, and Dante took his place. We hadn't talked since his holiday gala, but he appeared much more at ease tonight than he had at Valhalla. Perhaps he was finally settling into the rhythm of parenthood, or perhaps it was the near-empty glass of scotch in his hand. This is impressive, he said, skipping the standard greetings. I had my doubts about you, but you pulled it off.
Everyone keeps saying that,
I grumbled, but it was hard to stay annoyed when the night was going so well. Thank you. Dante inclined his head, his gaze flicking to the bar where Vivian was talking to Sloane, Isabella, and Alessandra. It lingered on his wife for a soft moment before it returned to me and hardened. I have to admit, part of me was hoping you'd fail, Dante said with surprising frankness. I haven't forgotten about Vegas, Miami, or the dozens of questionable situations you've dragged Luca into. However, his voice turned dry. If my brother can clean up his act after years of useless partying, I suppose you can too. Dante Russo, the king of backhanded compliments. I wouldn't say the partying was useless, I drawled. It gave me the experience I needed to do this. I gestured around us. Dante's eyes narrowed a fraction of an inch. Then, to my shock, he let out a genuine-sounding laugh. Keep that same energy tomorrow, he said, brushing past me to rejoin Vivian. You'll need it. Tomorrow. My first evaluation. The fate of $8 billion. I would be lying if I said my stomach didn't sink an inch at the reminder. But tomorrow was tomorrow. I'd done my best, and there was nothing I could do between now and morning that would move the needle in a meaningful manner. So instead of worrying, I grabbed a drink from a passing server's tray, tossed it back, and simply enjoyed the rest of the night. I'd earned it. Judgment Day took place the following morning via video conference. Considering the pomp and circumstance that surrounded the reading of my father's will, it seemed pretty anticlimactic for the fate of $8 billion to be decided over Zoom. But everyone was too busy to travel to Bogota for an in-person gathering, so Zoom it was. Sloane and I were both at my house, but for optics reasons, we took the call in separate rooms. I was in the library, she was in the living room. 5 faces stared back at me from the screen as I explained my business plan, my rebuilding efforts after the fire, and the opening smash success, The only thing I didn't tell them was the fire sabotage part. Alex had sworn me to secrecy, and it had raised more questions than it answered, especially after he told me he found the saboteur but couldn't disclose their identity at this time. All he said was they had ties to a mercenary group that was targeting certain members of the business community for confidential reasons. Part of me wanted detail so I could take revenge on the person who'd caused so much strife. But a larger part was happy to keep the fire in my past and let the professionals deal with it. General rule of life, don't go looking for more problems than you already had. After I finished my spiel, Mariana spoke first.
Before we proceed with our evaluation, we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge the biases of certain committee members.
The chairwoman of the Castillo Group's board was petite and sturdy-looking with glossy black hair and an air of authoritative competence. She'd never liked me. She thought my behavior reflected poorly on the company, and while she wasn't exactly wrong, I wasn't going to let her railroad this meeting or slander Sloane's character. Obviously, that was who she was talking about. Mariana was staring straight at Sloane Square on the screen. To her credit, Sloane didn't blink an eye at the scrutiny. But I was less forgiving. I assume you're referring to my relationship with Sloane. If so, that's a non-issue, I said coolly. Were it an actual issue, you or another committee member should have raised your concerns beforehand. Mariana gave me a thin smile.
I'm not accusing anyone of anything,
she said, her tone matching mine.
I'm simply reminding all those present that you two are, in fact, dating, and anything Ms. Kensington says will be influenced by that relationship. You're right.
Sloane cut in before anyone else could respond. Her eyes glinted, and I hid a sudden smile. Mariana was about to get her ass handed to her.
What I say will be influenced by our relationship. I've worked with Javier for 3.5 years, and I'm the only person on this call that has watched him build the vault from the ground up. I've watched him grow from a hedonistic degenerate.
Whoa, a bit harsh, but okay.
To someone with passion, pride, purpose. That's the man I fell in love with, and when I cast my vote, those will be the reasons behind it. My vote won't be biased because I'm dating him. It'll be biased because I know firsthand how hard he's worked to launch the vault. If he wasn't the type of man who'd do that, we wouldn't be dating in the first place.
Sloane pinned Mariana with a steady gaze.
Alberto's will stated Javier must fulfill the chief executive officer position to the best of his abilities. In my opinion, he's done that and more.
She addressed the rest of the committee.
It should come as no surprise, then, that I vote yes.
My hidden smile blossomed into a full-fledged grin. In 5 minutes, Sloane had undercut Mariana's sneak attack, redirected the committee's attention to the purpose of this call, and added the first tally in my column. That's my girl. Mariana looked like she'd swallowed a gallon of raw lemon juice, but there was nothing else she could say on the topic. The vote proceeded apace.
I agree with Sloane's judgment, Eduardo said. What Javier has accomplished in 6 months is extraordinary, and the coverage has been glowing. I also vote yes.
My heart rattled in anticipation. 2 out of 5. One more vote, and I was in the clear.
The timeline is impressive, but I'm not convinced of the vault's longevity,
Mariana said.
Nightclubs come and go, and in my opinion, it's a lazy concept to start with. Despite having a silent partner, you answer largely to yourself. There's no board, no shareholders, nothing you're truly the CEO of. Fulfilling CEO duties to the best of your ability means choosing something that isn't an easy win. I vote no.
Easy win? I locked an acerbic reply behind clenched teeth. Arguing wouldn't be smart, but she was voting in bad faith. I'd also addressed her later concern in my presentation, which included plans for expansion if the New York location was successful enough. But I hadn't expected Mariana to vote yes anyway, so I didn't push back. The next vote, however, did shock me.
I'm sorry, Javier, Tio Martin said.
A feeling of dread curdled in my chest.
As proud as I am personally,
Mariana made some good points. I also vote no. He didn't elaborate or meet my eyes. And I knew with sudden certainty that for all his fairness, he wasn't immune to domestic manipulation. He'd obviously voted no to placate Tia Lupe. 2-2. It was a tie. And there was one vote left. All eyes swung toward Dante. He rubbed his thumb over his bottom lip, his expression pensive. Our short conversation last night gave me some hope, but I had no idea whether it was enough to overcome his long-seated dislike toward me. The minutes ticked by. Tio Martin shifted in his seat. Eduardo's brows wrinkled with concern. Mariana's mouth pursed so tight it resembled a prune. Sloane and I were the only ones who didn't give anything away, though a bead of sweat cut down my back despite an air-conditioned breeze. Dante lowered his hand and said, so casually he sounded like he was discussing the weather instead of a $7.9 billion fortune. Yes. That was it. No explanation, no grand flourish after keeping us on tenterhooks for so long. Just a simple, resounding yes. That was all I needed. Relief exploded behind my ribcage, leaving me lightheaded. A grinning Eduardo started saying something about follow-up paperwork, but his words blurred beneath the weight of my elation. I did it. I fucking did it. I didn't need their validation, but honestly, it felt good to have it. The call ended minutes later, and I took great satisfaction at the sight of Mariana's frown before she signed off.
I screenshotted an image of Mariana's face so you can look at it if you ever feel down.
I turned, another smile taking over my face when Sloane entered the room. She wore a perfectly pressed silk blouse and pajama shorts. The biggest perk of taking work calls at home, no one could see below your waist. You take such good care of me, I teased, pulling her into my lap. Thanks for casting the first vote, by the way. What you said
was true. I didn't say anything I didn't mean.
Sloane's face softened for an instant before mischief sparked.
Just don't forget that when you're drafting your own will. I'm only doing this for your money.
Are you now?
Yeah, ah!
She let out a yelp of surprise when I stood abruptly and maneuvered us so I straddled her on the floor.
What was that you were saying about my money?
I threatened, pinning her wrists above her head with one hand. I reshaped my grin into a stern frown. Heat and laughter glittered in her eyes.
That it makes you 7.9 billion times, huh? Oh, God.
The rest of her sentence dissolved into a gasp when I slid a hand beneath her shirt and palmed her breast. It was the weekend, I'd just pulled off the biggest night of my life, and I had a long, free day ahead of me. If Sloane wanted to tease me, I could return the favor 100-fold.
Not good, Luna.
I dipped my head, my mouth brushing hers with each word. She tasted sweet, warm, perfect. God has no hand in what I'm about to do to you.
It was for the best, considering our activities in the library and my bedroom and the rooftop for the rest of that day were decidedly unholy. Sloane and I didn't talk about work, money, or anything else. Not even when the sun set and we lay sweaty and exhausted in my bed. That was the best part about being with the right person. Some days we could talk all night. Other days we didn't need words at all. Just being with each other was enough.
Epilogue. Javier. 18 months later. Per the terms of my father's will, I received an installment of my inheritance every time I passed an evaluation. I'd just aced my third one last week, and the number before the zeros in my bank account ticked up exponentially, even after I donated half the payment to various charities. Ironically, the vault was doing so well I didn't need my inheritance anymore, but it was nice to have that cushion. After its smash-opening night and Maud DeVee's subsequent profile of me in its movers and shakers section, the club skyrocketed into fame. I was already making plans to open a new location in Miami, but first, I had an even bigger change to settle at home.
I think that's it.
Sloane planted her hands on her hips and looked around the living room.
Everything is unloaded and accounted for.
Piles of cardboard boxes covered the floor, each one neatly labeled with its contents. Clothing, fall/winter. Clothing, spring/summer. Books, office supplies. So on and so forth. Movers had spent the day transporting those boxes from Sloane's old apartment to my townhouse. Just when I thought there couldn't possibly be more stuff, another truckload arrived.
Are you sure? I asked. You packed so light.
Very funny,
she huffed. She patted one of the boxes.
I couldn't leave my Louboutin collection or my review notebooks.
You have an entire box of review notebooks? Jesus, how many had she written?
Don't be ridiculous,
Sloane said.
I couldn't fit them into one box. I split them up into two.
I shook my head with a mock appalled expression. I changed my mind. You can't move in anymore. You're clearly not human, and that's a deal breaker for me.
Fine.
She turned and started unpacking a box labeled candles.
I'd planned on christening every room in this house to celebrate my move-in, but if you don't want me around...
She squealed when I wrapped an arm around her waist from behind and pulled her toward me.
You don't play fair, I growled. But who am I to disrupt your plans for such a thorough christening? I take back what I said. You can move in again.
How generous of you.
Sloane was still laughing when I turned her around to kiss her. Since we started dating, we dined at the finest restaurants, enjoyed the most exclusive shows, and luxuriated in weekend getaways everywhere from St. Lucia to Malibu. But these types of moments were my favorite. The casual, comfortable ones where we could be ourselves and nothing else. We were taking things slow, but moving in together felt like a natural progression after dating for so long. Honestly, I'd been ready a long time ago. But I'd waited until Sloane felt comfortable enough to give up her apartment, and in turn, a piece of her independence. It was a big move for her, so I hadn't taken it for granted when she told me she'd rather move into the townhouse than stay in her old building. An alarm chimed on Sloane's phone, breaking our kiss.
Shoot.
She pulled away and silenced the sound.
I didn't realize it was 6 already. We have to get ready soon, or we'll be late for Issa's party.
Isabella and Kai had gotten married shortly after the vault's opening, and she'd taken a short hiatus from writing to enjoy their honeymoon. However, she'd recently finished her latest novel and was celebrating its publication with a book launch party that night.
Luna, Isabella will be late to Isabella's party, I said.
And before we start getting ready, I have a housewarming gift for you.
You've lived here for years. The house is already warmed.
Sloane's eyes sparkled at my sigh of exasperation.
But I love a good gift. What is it?
It's in here.
I guided her to the hall next to the living room. I'd been sure it was the right gift when I bought it, but a ripple of anxiety ran down my spine when we turned the corner and the latest member of our household came into view. Sloane drew a sharp inhale of breath.
Is that?
A goldfish, I confirmed. My worry that I'd overstepped melted when she touched the mini aquarium, her eyes suspiciously bright. The bright orange-yellow fish inside swam toward her hand and examined it for a second, his fins wagging, before he returned to the little pagoda the pet store had set up in the middle of his habitat. Apparently, he was more interested in exploring his new home than the humans hovering over him.
I didn't think I'd miss having a goldfish ignore me so much,
Sloane said, her voice thick.
He's perfect. Thank you.
I'm glad you like him.
The store said he was the feistiest one. We stared at the fish as it lazily circled the pagoda. But they didn't define what they meant by feisty.
Feisty?
Sloane pursed her lips in thought.
That should be his name.
Feisty the fish? My God. If the store said he was the goldest one, would you have named him Goldie? I asked, my cheeks hurting from the force of my grin. Her pensive expression gave way to a stern glare.
Very funny,
she said, her cheeks pink.
I'm not great at naming pets, okay?
No, I think Feisty is a great name, a proud name. A literal name, I called after her as she stalked back to the living room. Laughter warped around me as I followed her.
Shut up before I throw a lamp at you,
she threatened.
If you're so great at names, you choose one.
Nope, he's for you, and whatever name you choose is the one that sticks. At least Feisty is a better option than the Fish 2.0. I corralled my face into some semblance of seriousness. Every fish deserves a name, and his is Feisty. I almost made it through the entire sentence without cracking up again. Almost! My failure resulted in Sloane throwing a cushion at my head, but it was worth it. Feisty the fish. I chortled.
If I tell Dr. Hatfield about this and she says break up with you, I'll do it without hesitation,
Sloane warned. Oh, come on, Luna. I'm just poking fun. I swallowed another bubble of laughter. Besides, Dr. Hatfield would never say that. She loves me.
She doesn't know you.
She knows me by proxy. Dr. Hatfield was her new therapist. Sloane and I had both resumed therapy last year with different practitioners who specialized in extremely dysfunctional family issues. It took a few tries before we found the right fits, but I'd forgotten how, well, therapeutic it was to discuss my problems with a stranger whose job was to listen to those problems. Therapy had been Sloane's idea. She would never patch things up with her father or Georgia, but Penn was still part of that family. Sloane thought therapy would help her better navigate her relationship with Penn versus the rest of the Kensingtons now that she was seeing her sister on a weekly basis, which meant increased contact with George and Caroline. Sometimes I accompanied her to see Penn. Other times I left them to their sister's only bonding. Surprisingly, therapy helped me more this time around than when I underwent it as a teenager. Maybe I was more open to it now that I wasn't mired in resentment and guilt. Whatever it was, my bi-weekly sessions had helped me come to terms with my past and my relationship with my father. At the end of the day, it didn't matter why he'd put the loophole in his will, or why he did any of the things he did. That chapter was behind me, and I was ready to move on to the next one.
I forgot to tell you. Guess who I ran into the other day?
Sloane asked after we got past the Feisty episode and walked upstairs to shower and change.
I had a meeting with a columnist from Modern Manhattan. They have the same parent company as Fast and Furriness, and when I was in the elevator up...
Don't say it. I grinned, already anticipating her next words.
Perry Wilson walked in.
Sloane laughed.
You should have seen his face. He tried to leave, but the doors had already closed. We spent 10 floors pretending the other didn't exist.
Perry had lost his libel lawsuit last year, and Kai bought out his blog soon after. He'd renamed it Confidential Matters, deleted every trace of Perry from the site, and installed a professional team of writers and fact-checkers. It was currently pulling in double the traffic Perry had attracted during his peak. People were tired of clickbait articles and baseless mudslinging, and an increasing number were gravitating toward better quality news. Meanwhile, Perry had been reduced to manning the phones at Fast and Furriness. I couldn't say I felt sorry for him. Sloane and I entered our room. Our. It didn't sound as strange as I'd expected. I guess in my mind I'd already considered the house ours before she moved in. That being said, it wouldn't be proper to skip an official celebration, would it? So, I said casually as Sloane stripped off her clothes in preparation for a shower. Did you mean...
No.
She knew what I was going to say before I said it.
We don't have time. We'll be late. Hate!
Sloane shrieked with laughter as I grabbed her and hauled her onto the bed. She was right. We did show up late to Isabella's party. But we'd also christened the first of many rooms in our house. I couldn't think of a better way to start the next chapter of our lives together.
Sloane, 6 months later. You were right. This was exactly what I needed. I stretched my arms over my head with a content sigh. I could stay here forever.
Say that again,
Javier said. What?
The first three words. You were right.
I rolled my eyes, but I couldn't restrain a smile. You're insufferable.
Yet you're here with me. What does that say about you?
He teased. A breeze swept through his hair, ruffling the black strands as we walked along the beach. That I'm a masochist,
I knew there was a reason why I loved you.
I laughed, unable to keep up my pretense when he looked so relaxed and happy, and I felt so relaxed and happy. We were nearing the end of our month-long trip to Spain. Javier had surprised me with the tickets last Christmas, but we'd waited for the weather to warm up before we came. Our housekeeper was taking care of Feisty. The vault was finally running smoothly enough on its own for Javier to take that much time off, and I'd left Kensington PR in Jillian's capable hands. I'd promoted her to my director of office operations last year with a matching pay raise, and I had full confidence in her ability to run the ship while I was gone. I still checked my email compulsively whenever Javier was in the shower or getting us drinks, but I no longer felt the need to control everything that came across my inbox. After all, I was on vacation. So for the past 3.5 weeks, Javier and I had eaten, slept, and drank our way through Madrid, Seville, Valencia, and Barcelona before ending in the place that had started it all, Mallorca. The island had marked the first big turning point in our relationship. Since our first vacation here had been cut short, it seemed appropriate to return and finish what we'd started.
What do you want to do tonight?
Javier asked, lacing his fingers through mine.
We can go dancing again, or we can stay in.
Let's stay in. If I dance anymore, my feet are going to fall off. We'd gone to a different club every night for the past 3 nights, often staying out until the sun rose, and my body was ready to sue. At least my dancing skills have improved, thanks to Javier. We lapsed into comfortable silence as the sun dipped below the horizon, transforming the sky into a palette of tangerines and lavenders. The clouds seemed to catch fire at the edges, a spectacle captured by the tranquil mirror of the ocean. I waited for a familiar stab of sadness, but it never came. In hindsight, I hadn't felt it for a while, but I'd never noticed its absence until now.
Penny for your thoughts?
Javier said.
You look like you're surprised about something.
A smile touched my lips. He always knew me so well. I used to hate sunsets, I admitted. I thought they were depressing. Sunsets represented endings, and they reminded me that every good thing comes to an end. I always felt sad when I saw one, but now, I don't think they're so bad. I shrugged. I like nights better than days anyway. Nights meant dinners at home, beneath the chandelier we'd fallen in love with during our last trip to Paris. They meant crackling fires and conversations in bed, the type that meandered easily until one or both of us fell asleep. Nights were love and warmth and moonlight, my safe haven from the world. Without sunsets, there would be no nights. And just like that, my decades-old animosity toward the otherwise beloved phenomenon dissolved as quietly as if it had never existed.
Good,
Javier said softly.
I like nights better, too.
Later that evening, when we curled up on the couch to watch a movie, I didn't bother retrieving my review notebook. I just wanted to enjoy the film, and I did. The office meet cute, the montage of cute dates, the hero running through the airport for his grand gesture, even the happy ending featuring a pet dog and a ring. I loved it all. I had no business judging others' cliches. After all, I was on a romantic European getaway with my long-term boyfriend, who'd started as a client I hated before we gradually fell in love, only I'd been too stubborn to admit it, and I'd almost lost him before I came to my senses and reconciled with him at the top of the Empire State Building. Now we lived together in a townhouse with a pet fish and a rooftop movie theater, and we were nauseatingly, disgustingly blissful. Who said happily ever afters were unrealistic? Thank you for listening to King of Sloth, Kings of Sin, Book 4, written by Anna Wong. Narrated by Elena Wolf, a SAG-AFTRA member, and Gregory Salinas. Produced by One Night Stand Studios. Post-production by Kyle Verville of One Night Stand Studios. Text copyright 2024 by Anna Huang. Production copyright 2024 by Anna Huang. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.